To explain what I have given you here is, okay, you've got 5 of 13 lessons, so there's already an issue there, but that's okay. We're going to be all right. Okay, anyway, this gentleman, Wallace, former detective, and actually I think he's still working some. But anyway, he sends out like a daily thing and has inserts and some things like that. And I have cherry-picked some of those. And also, somehow or other, some of my notes got in there. I hadn't had time to realize exactly what I sort of slipped in there, but there's some kind of weird stuff in there. But anyway, don't worry. So what I've done is he has sort of his detective definitions, and I have put those in there, and then there's these tools. So I'll be kind of pulling some of these out, but I kind of put it all in one place for you. Then here's just kind of some of his, what he calls, rapid responses. So you get a question. He's got some nice rapid responses there. And then what I really like is I think managed to confuse a good number of you. And I apologize for that. So, but you kind of say, you know, there was something really good brought up in class, and I can't remember exactly. And he does, in these little kind of inserts that I put here, a very nice quick summary. So if a question comes up or something like that, this is a nice place to go to look at those. Several of those. So that's probably the most useful thing, well, it is as far as in the appendices right now. Now, we are kind of coming up. I'm going to kind of actually hit it some in this archaeology class we've got coming up. And so I think there was a general kind of interest in the class to have a copy of the Q gospel. Just give me that, and we'll do a swap out or something like that, because my non-noted ones I'm out of. Okay. Yes. Oh, hey.
Hey. Snuck in behind you.
Yes, you did. We'll have words about that later. Yes, Chester.
Is this stuff online too?
The appendices are not, but it will be.
So what's the website?
Embry Hills.
I'm talking about to get.
How do you?
The detective thing you're talking about.
Yes, his website. Just do cold case, and you'll come up cold case Wallace, and you'll find him. Okay. Yeah,
okay,
he has that. Yeah, he's big on the website. So anyway, his is a Q. Now, Q is derived. It's like the scholars have kind of made up Q. So this is their sort of summary of what Q is. So realize this isn't a real document. It's been made up by scholars.
So is it a decision they made of which...
Yeah, of which... For, yeah.
...valid or something like that?
Yeah. So it's made up. Q gospel is made up. Not found in the ground, not found in any library until a few years ago.
So why do they say that that's a Q? What is that supposed to represent? The actual writings and then
the
them?
Okay. Let me finish Thomas, and then we'll come back to there, and we probably need to start recording if I'm giving this. Or, okay. The Gospel of Thomas is a Gnostic document and was found in the deserts in the 40s or so, 50s. So anyway, it's a fairly both of them are similar, and the critics and all kind of like it because it's kind of, it fits their religion or what they think they want religion to be. So anyway, I'm not sure if it's necessarily. I'm not sure if it is the Jesus, if I think this came from the Jesus seminar. I mean, no one really knows. They can't decide what exactly is the Q document. This is one somebody made up.
Okay. It's the result of higher criticism.
Higher criticism.
Which is, presumes that we know today better what was the original sayings than the people, you know, within the next few hundred years who added to it.
Right.
Somehow by our analysis we can tell which was the original and which wasn't.
Right.
And so you filter out stuff that...
Yeah.
Like miraculous things wouldn't make it.
What they have done is, well, and what we're generally, I mean, this kind of gets to where the class and what the class is about, okay, is that there are, if you're a naturalist, if you have that presupposition, you can't have miracles, okay? If you're a naturalist, you can't do miracles. So then how do you explain the Bible? In particular, we're focused on the New Testament, because we have the most documentation. It is the easiest to show that there's not enough time to add stuff. So the general working of this body of folks is that things were added to the New Testament. And what you start with are sayings. The sayings of Jesus. All right? So the reason they like the Gospel of Thomas is because there's no narrative. It is sayings. Okay, so you have those sayings of Jesus. The Q is, as Marty described, these higher criticisms that they fill with a methodology. They have a methodology that they look at the New Testament and they believe they can discern what statements of Jesus are made that are original. So what I have given you is a document that one of that group has put together. Okay? So I just, to let you know that it is a modern gospel that assumes that it has what goes back in time.
So, but it's mostly about a kind of a bunch of theological presuppositions than it is about textual or fragments or manuscripts.
Oh, yeah. Forget it.
It has nothing to do with
nothing.
With measuring how many times this verse is found. Or it's just all about kind of presuming some things. The sayings must have been first. I don't know how you prove that. Miraculous doesn't exist, so take those all out. Narrative had to have been stitched in at some later point,
right,
by somebody else. None of that's provable, but if you assume it, this is what you end up with.
That's correct.
So it's really more about presuppositions than it is about conclusions.
Yes. So if you don't believe that miracles can happen because you presuppose naturalism, you get the true gospel. But what's weird, and I think we kind of commented that on one of the lessons, because I compared Matthew and the Q Gospel, I think it's not in tonight, so I think it was the last class. I do a comparison. And the Q Gospel includes, John sending disciples to Jesus and say, "Are you the man?" And I think he's actually the Son of Man, actually. And, says, "Hey, the blind, they're healed, the lame are healed." And lays out all of that. And so, I am confused. How can...
There are no records of healing blind people. It's just records that he said he did.
That's right.
Because it's a dialogue.
Yeah. So, anyway, did I more or less answer? We kind of jumped a little bit, but we will spend some time. I'll give an assignment so that you have kind of a chance to look over some of them. But, I mean, basically, if you read the Gospel of Thomas, there's going to be some statements in there that you haven't read in the Bible, in the New Testament. And so that's kind of where, and they're sort of Gnostic in nature. And they were also found in this Nehagai grouping, which is a bunch of Gnostic books. So that's, you know, we talked about John kind of dealing with the Gnostics. And so, I mean, that continued to grow. So the Gospel of Thomas is a Gnostic gospel. But the Jesus Seminar loves it. They absolutely love that book. I was kind of trying to do some prep work.
Can I make just a quick observation?
All right.
I think in every field, almost, of human wisdom, progress is being made. The biologists know things that people didn't know 100, 200 years ago. The zoologists know things. The physicists know things. And theologians have to keep up with that. So they've got to come up constantly with something new. That the old ideas are bound to be out of date.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've got to come up with something new. So they come up with all kinds of new theories about how the Bible was formed and everything. And they know more about Jesus than Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John did.
Yeah.
In fact, that John seminar, they got together to decide what Jesus really said.
Yeah.
That you can't trust Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They know more about it than Jesus did.
Yeah. And again, as you say, they're smarter because, I mean, and
you got to prove it.
And they prove it. And also, it's part of where it's like you do some of the readings, and it's like, okay, you say Jesus died on the cross. He didn't swoon, all of that. Well, it was a Roman soldier. You didn't have a medical, trained medical person confirm that he was dead. You know, it's sort of, they try to put the way we look at the world today, and then try to put that same thing on the folks of that time. Now, you know, you get into maybe an interesting discussion on superstition. You know, they believed in Greek gods and all of that. But a Roman soldier knew how to kill people. And to say that he wasn't qualified to determine whether someone's dead, I sort of might disagree with. So, and again, this all kind of falls into what I'm hopefully going to do in this class, is to simply show that when they say Jesus is a myth, okay, when that statement is made, that, oh, you believe in the tooth fairy also, that you look at the evidence internally, externally, and you look at the time, and you look at, oh, there's a difference in presupposition here. This person is not willing to admit the supernatural, so he has simply come to the point that he has to come to. And so you may, if it's the 10% agnostics, atheists, be able to get them to change their mind, but you at least plant a seed. One guy puts a rock in his sheep, make him uncomfortable by his conclusion. But what we're trying to go through in all of this class is to show there's not enough time for all of these things. And so if there's not enough time, you're sort of forced, okay, all of the stuff they took about layers, putting on, it just can't, there's not enough time. So you then come back and you've got to come to a conclusion. You either have to say, hey, I've got to start considering that there is a supreme being. Okay? I'm forced to that because the New Testament talks about all these miracles. Then you get some prophecies. We can just keep adding stuff on there. But, you know, you look at all you have, really the short time between the events and when we have documents, and there isn't. It's not a tooth fairy. It is not a myth. It is not a legend. The things that make up myth and legend don't happen in a generation. And that's all you have. And so you've got to come back and consider, hey, how could miracles happen? How could this document occur? Okay, so we kind of talked. We'll kind of try to get... So our presupposition, natural and supernatural. Today's objective, pretty simple, which is good, given y'all's good questions. Show that the Bible text has been preserved
and has been transmitted in a reliable form. Because, you know, some people say, 2,000 years ago? 2,000 years? You want me to believe that something from 2,000 years ago has been transmitted to me today correctly? I mean, they had no Xerox, they had no printing presses, they had no Google, they had, you know, all of that kind of information is not there. So how can I trust this? Okay, so our three questions for tonight. Number one, can I be sure that these modern-day versions of the Bible, the end product of countless copying throughout the ages, bear any resemblance to what the authors originally wrote? So that's what we're looking at tonight. How can anyone believe the New Testament account of the life of Jesus, seeing that it was written long after his death? Okay, that's not just this class. This is all of the classes. And hopefully I'll have all of y'all in agreement. All right, and then what we have kind of scattered through, since I don't have just one class on the contradictions, we have just kind of a little peppered where we'll say, hey, what about this? So, aren't the genealogies of Jesus given in Matthew and Luke contradictory? That's how they phrased it. You could also, aren't they different? Okay, are those two genealogies different? And the answer is, yes, they're different. Now, anyone have thoughts or how would we possibly understand why the two genealogies are different? There is a difference in emphasis, but what is that different emphasis? Matthew kind of writing has a slant towards those of a Jewish background. Luke writing to those more of a Greek background. So there is sort of a different point of view. But what would be a pretty straightforward answer of why they're different? Two different people. Matthew is going through to Joseph. And Luke is going to Mary. So both are from the house of David, but they're through two lines. And I believe there's enough people on there you wouldn't even call them kissing cousins. No. So anyway, two different family groups there. So again, Matthew going through the male, because that's kind of how the Jews would go through the lineage. And then Luke, again, clearly, I mean, you can go through Luke, and it is pretty clear that Luke had a conversation with Mary, the mother of Jesus. I mean, there's just things in there that he talks about that just, you really think, okay, he talked to Mary, or somebody who's hanging out with Mary, or that. So, you know, there's pieces of information there.
Well, do we know, like, but why doesn't it say Mary?
Oh,
It is interesting how it says, as was supposed of Joseph. You know, so,
yeah.
And I think it's amazing how it is preserved for us. I mean, because we don't have
right. That
kind of stuff. And then so you can say through either side. You know, so if you say, well, if he is, you know, he wasn't Joseph's son, like, he is still the son of David. You know?
Yeah.
So it's awesome. Like,
yeah.
But, yeah, I wonder why in Luke. Do you understand? Is that something about their culture? Like, why does it say being the son of Joseph, the son of?
I think, I am guessing.
Okay.
But Luke is incredibly detailed on his history, on his people. So, who was the parents of Jesus? It wasn't Joseph. You know, so you then have to go through Mary. So, I just would propose that because it really is Mary, that he does it through Mary.
If he had a contact with Mary, and he says in the first part of the Luke that he actually talked to eyewitnesses.
Yes.
And as you said, he said Mary held these things in his in her heart. Well, how would he know that if she didn't tell him?
Yeah.
But if he got a genealogy from Mary, she's going to give him the one that she knows, and it would be correct.
Yeah.
He's going to get Joseph from another source.
Yeah. And he knew that. I mean, he had Matthew to look at, so he knew Matthew had gone through Joseph. So, but I think really it is Matthew. Luke includes a lot more about the women, and I believe part of that is because he talked to them. All right. So, again, it's a contradictory, and it all could be wrong, but it sort of makes sense. Anyone kind of still? I mean, that's a good question.
It's different, but it's not contradictory.
Yeah.
Both of them can be correct. If one is the genealogy to Mary, the other to Joseph.
Yeah. Okay. If you remember, like a long time ago, we talked about the epistles of Paul that the critics say, yep, Paul wrote these in the 50s. And so what I would like, or I kind of ask, hey, let's look and say, you know, can we find things about the resurrection, miracles, the deity of Jesus in those? And so I kind of looked at our classes and looked to say, I think we'll have enough time. And we noticed it wasn't tonight because we clearly won't have time. So these are those who have volunteered to this point. No one had really, or I kind of set myself to go first so you have a clue as to what I'm looking for. Although, Joel, you're in there with me, so we'll coordinate, okay? So lesson seven. Now, there's a lot of people who aren't on that list. So you have two options. Kind of give me your name. And we'll add you there, and you can kind of tag team with whoever else is on that list. Or you can just do them all, and when we're doing over those over the class, you can just contribute to the class. Okay. All right. So anyway, that's our schedule. I'll put it up on the board or something so you have a reminder. But you at least know you're not till lesson eight, because Joel and I are first batters up. Okay, I also managed to confuse y'all on the timeline. So this is my attempt to take the timeline and do it in a little more friendly way. Okay, so ministry of Jesus, 27 to 30, could be 30 to 33, I tend to favor more the 27 to 30. The epistles of Paul, which we're going to talk about, 50 to 57, temple destroyed in 70, and then there's a few more other things like at some point I'll put the death of James, the brother of Jesus, and stuff. But this is kind of biblical times, and then you've got John writing in the early 90s while he's his epistles and his gospel. So we have kind of that. So that's kind of where we're looking. Those are your eyewitnesses. And we're trying to establish the reliability of these eyewitnesses, that the testimony of the eyewitnesses have not been corrupted in their way to us. And so that's kind of the evidence that we're trying to look to understand. We then have the guys that are tended to be called the early church fathers. Okay, they really wrote a lot. And so Clement, Polycarp, Ignatius, Tyrillian, and again, we're looking 250 is kind of our end mark, because again, our whole kind of thing is closeness to the eyewitnesses of when they're writing. So we're kind of staying focused. Now, you can argue with me, 200 years is not close, but believe me, right? You know more about the American Revolution than you know about the Vikings taking England and whatever in 1066. It's a little closer, okay? And definitely more than you know about the days of Nebuchadnezzar, more or less, or his dad, because it's not talked a lot about in the Bible.
So anyway, we're looking at there as evidence, you know, 95, Clement quotes 10 books, Polycarp 16, 115, Ignatius kind of mentions the gospel, the groups kind of there. Tyrillian, you get 23 of the 27. And what was interesting is it's amazing what you stumble across on the internet, or maybe not. But, there was this fella that was just there. How's that, Marty? Everybody on that side see better now? Okay. Clement did not quote the New Testament. That was so. You are so dumb. Clement never quoted. And the guy kind of was answering his question. Well, you know, it's kind of strange. Well, first of all, you're being rude. Second of all, I look at the letter of Clement, and here is all of the passages that he quotes. Now, does he quote them word for word? No, he tends to paraphrase and some things like there. But they're there. Okay? So, these folks, you come across someone who says, Jesus doesn't exist. Or just really hammers. It isn't there. You're a liar. You're lying to people. They could be more ignorant than the normal person. Okay? So, you've got to have enough awareness to kind of find these things. Okay. The next grouping there, these are the papyrus. Okay? These are copies, letters, portions of the New Testament, of the epistles that have been found. One of the big finds was a garbage dump in a little Egyptian town. Okay? So, it was to a point they'd actually thrown it away. So, So these are some of the most early manuscripts. So when they start talking about, most will not say after 100 A.D. Most of them will accept within the 100 A.D. But there are some that will say, hey, 110 A.D., whatever. It's a little hard to do that when Clement is quoting them. When I'm finding, John Rawlins, 125 A.D., pretty solid. To say, hey, John was written 130. So it kind of, every time they find these fragments, it makes life harder on the critics. So anyway, and we're going to kind of build on this, okay? So having gone through that away, is everyone on board with that timeline and what we're trying to do? Because the timeline is the instrument that we're going to kind of use to just keep moving in the time to show this whole thing of layering and all, there's just not enough time. Okay? So that's what we're using that for. Okay. So, again, not enough time for this one. Okay. So we said, we read the New Testament. These are the kind of things we hear about who Jesus is. We talk to the critics, he was made a deity after his death. He was a magician. He was a non-apocalyptic teasing teacher. Some say no, he was an apocalyptic prophet, cynic. He was a just man, never claimed to be God, a revolutionary sage, and a iconoclastic Jew. So these are these folks that, again, think they know better than the folks who were actually there. And these are the different things that they've kind of come up with. Okay, so when we look, we're looking and, looking on, the transmitting of the scriptures, the New Testaments in particular, that they tended, that there were different areas, there's kind of those four locations where they tended together, okay? And so that they would tend to kind of dominate. So what you had is you had a Western version, an Alexandrian version, a Byzantine version, a Caesarean version, okay? That's, when we look at it, think of that as New King James, NIV, that sort of mindset there. All right, and so you would have the original, the autographs. The originals were called autographs. You got 27. It would generally be said that actually what you would do at that time, again, it wasn't unusual to dictate. There would be a few who would write, but a lot of times you would dictate. And you can kind of look through the epistles and see, you know, it's kind of described. Hey, I wrote this, you know, then, you know, Paul will say, hey, I'm signing this. This is me in my own hand. You can tell how, you know, that it's me writing. So, but what would happen? So, generally, you would have someone would keep a copy of the original, and then they would send. Okay? So, and then you would get this, and, you know, people which generally tend to make copies. So you would go through the generations. Now, first century, generally done on papyrus. You really don't find much on leather, vellum, but it would be on papyrus. It was kind of the favor. So how long do you think a document written, copied, would still be usable? 10 years? Five? You'd say 10? Okay. Anyone want to give me 20? Did I hear 20 anywhere? All right, Chester, give me 20. Can I get 50? Can I get 50? All right, I got some 50s there. 200! Do I hear 200 in there? All right, I got a 200. Come on, Chester, you can't keep upping on this. It's an option. Okay, so now I kind of was of the mind, you know, you read a lot, papyrus being used, stuff like that, 10, 20 years. Okay? You had thought. All right, so Craig Evans kind of made a statement, and I kind of followed up on it, and I think I'm more than willing to agree with him now, is there is evidence of much longer. Okay, we will start with the Dead Sea Scrolls. 200-year-old manuscripts from, 200 B.C. or 160 B.C., 150 B.C., all indications still being used in 60 A.D.
Mixed in with other documents that were newer.
The point yes, is, you know, so that's right.
At that time, so, they were already old for use by the contemporaries of, the,
of that time. So this isn't for every document. Every document was not used for long periods of time. Some would probably have a much shorter life. Plus, you could argue, can I really count the Dead Sea Scrolls? Because those were on leather. Okay. The indication is that if you go to, Pompeii, Herculaneum, that they, you know, the House of Scrolls and stuff, they kind of have done some analysis on that. There appears to be some of those scrolls written 100 years ago, at that time. So the user was still using it even though the scroll was 100 years old. And I say the garbage dump in Egypt because I have a hard time saying the real word of the town. But what the evidence, or at least some of the archaeologists, those guys digging it up, at one point kind of found a basket of scrolls in the dump. You know, kind of took the whole basket of scrolls and dumped them. Okay. Again, 150 years. That they had been used, and then after 150 years, the grandkids said, I am not keeping this scroll. And so it kind of got dumped at that point. So what you come to is some of the manuscripts lasted, you know, probably the 5, 10 years. Some of them were used. In the case of Sinaiticus, okay, a leather-bound copy, so you can say, hold on, does that really count for papyrus? But it was written 350s, and in the 800s, someone went over and sort of kind of darkened or re-inked everything. And so presumably that meant it was used for another 100 or 200 years. So if you get a good copy of a manuscript, and you're using it as part of your master, so you're not copying from the fifth copy, you're going back and copying from the second copy. So there, again, not all, but it is not unreasonable that when we're looking at a document from 150 to 200 AD, that the copy it came from was very close to the autograph. Some of the early church fathers claim that they saw autographs or knew somebody. Okay, so I tend to trust the early church fathers, but I'm not at the point to say, hey, you know, that is definite. But again, showing some of those manuscripts, again, were used for a long time. So this is the same thing again, but it looks a lot prettier. This is just kind of a summary of where all of the New Testament was written, kind of scattered. So, you know, you think of John, he would have wrote this in the 90s, and here it is in Egypt in 125. So it got moved there, distributed pretty good. And we don't have enough time for this. Okay, another thing, when you get into looking at the documents, the texts and stuff, these guys get kind of in the hedges pretty quick. But when they do the summaries, it can show you some very interesting things. This is a fellow who has spent a lot of time with these documents looking at copies of the Gospel of Matthew. So, you know, 150 to 200. So, you know, some of these go pretty quickly kind of out of the range that we are looking. But you can look at the scribes and look at their traits, okay? Were they strict? Were they kind of free? And again, their free isn't just sort of, oh, I think I'm going to add a verse to Matthew. It's just sort of, you know, they might let a word slip in. They might say, hey, you know, Luke had a very similar verse and kind of put in. So they're free or very free. You know, we might not fit our definition, but there's definitely a difference between them and their text or transmission quality. And what you see is these strict, and sort of that's this effort here. So what you see is that I can trace a heritage of a document potentially where the copy was made from a strict copy that was made from a strict copy that was made from a strict copy. So if you're not willing to buy 150, 200, I would come back and say that you can look at the manuscripts, at how the scribes were writing those manuscripts, and feel very comfortable in the transmission. We also have
just a look. If I remember right, one hallmark of the strict is that it would actually continue readings that were not as clear. In other words, if something's a more difficult reading, you know what I mean, it probably is stricter because the copiers were always trying to help.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So they might put in a word that would make it clearer or change it to a word that might fit better, at least from their point of view and their time. That's what you mean by free and very free.
Yes.
But strictly, I think a lot of times you look at two texts and say, which is the original Greek? Often the weighting would go to the one that's more difficult.
Yes.
Right? Because it's nobody helped it.
Yes. That's kind of an indication. And that's kind of how they, and that's one of the things that they look for. There will be cases where, it's clear error has been made.
Right. Copy the word twice in the line.
They will copy it, but then, potentially make a note or something on the side. Okay. We're totally shot on time. But, okay. Last answer, at least, how do you ensure the transmission? Okay? 2,000 years, how do you ensure proper transmission? How do you make sure that happened? Okay? The writers, we say, the original writers, inspired, although realizing that given our presupposition, we have no problem with that, whereas the person we're talking to may have an issue with that. So what's the methodology? How would you preserve and be sure that the words make it for 2,000 years?
More than one copy.
That's what God did. More than one copy. We have over 5,300 Greek documents. Okay? So, you know, what would happen is a lot of the ones that came to us, they would do to Latin because it was these Catholic scribes, monks, and stuff that were copying this stuff. But we have 5,300 copies. So now, when you have someone who says there are over 200,000 eras in the New Testament, what they generally do is take all of the eras of the 5,000 and multiply them. Okay, that's generally how you get to 200,000. So the methodology was variations. So, let's see. All right, there's your 200,000. Okay, so of the supposed 200,000 eras, of the sum 20,000 lines, or of the 20,000 lines in the New Testament. Okay, what's that, I believe? Yeah, New Testament, 20,000 lines. Of question, 40 lines, 400 words. Okay, and the reason that they're in question is, okay, we have, these are our oldest codexes, or some of our best codexes, having most of the Bibles. These are, you know, the Sinaiticus and the Vinaiticus are high-quality manuscripts. So, what you do is you look at a passage and say, well, how does it compare to Vinaiticus and Sinaiticus? They'll also then go and look at this papyrus. And so they'll do a comparison. And generally, you know, there's not an issue. But there are, I always love that exercise, but we don't get a shot at it. Okay. So, what I'm going to do is get... Yeah, go to Mark in your Bible. Go to Mark 8, Mark 9, Mark 16. Sorry, 16, verse 9. Oops, sorry. Go to Mark 16, and there should be a note around verse 9. Ashley, can you tell me what your note says? For like starting around 16:9.
Some of the earliest manuscripts do not include verses 9 through 20.
All right, Sinaiticus, Vinaiticus. What version are you using?
ESV.
Okay, do I have a New King James? Nope.
Verses 9 through 20 are bracketed in the New as not original. They are lacking in Codex Sinaiticus and Codex Vaticanus, although nearly all other manuscripts of Mark contain them.
And so that's kind of the thing, is that, let's see, it's like 400 copies, or 400, there are 400 early Greeks that have it, or, in other words, and also what you see, although I've had some, is here is, with that Sinaiticus. And there's a space there, okay? And if you kind of look, you kind of, Mark ends at a weird spot, an A. So the thing is there's this, there's the woman taken in idolatry, there's the
adultery.
verse where it talks about where it has God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit all nice in one verse. That those are some that we have some copies that do not have it, and copies that do have it. And so what you have in all of those is you have the notes. So it's sort of, it's like we have a couple of different source materials for those. There is some differences there. Some versions have decided to pull it out. Others have decided to make a note. But it's noted, okay? You are aware. It's not like we're totally ignorant. It is not like it's hidden. It's like clueless. There is over those 5,300 copies, so we're able to make that note and make people aware of that. So it has been translated. We have better knowledge today than at any time of what were the original words given in the New Testament. Okay, I've gone over time.